Not surprisingly, the president took an immediate liking to her. In a special issue dedicated to getting American youth to become physically fit, just like the astronaut Colonel Glenn, Kennedy enlists Superman on a mission to close the muscle gap. Comic book writers weren't alone in making this connection. In 1960, Norman Mailer wrote a ponderous piece for Esquire titled, Superman Comes to the Supermarket. Ostensibly a report from the Democratic National Convention in Los Angeles, the essay was more like a term paper for Noam Chomsky seminar. But it does give you a sense of how even leading intellectuals like Mailer understood that they were being offered a myth and were eager to accept it. The original Kennedy myth did not emphasize Kennedy's progressive credentials. Ted Sorensen recalled that JFK never identified himself as a liberal. It was only after his death that they began to claim him as one of theirs. Indeed, the Kennedy family had serious trouble with many self-described progressives who, after World War II, were essentially warmed over communists because of its close ties to that other prominent Irish-American politician, Joe McCarthy. After Roy Cohn, Bobby Kennedy was McCarthy's most valued aide. Jack Kennedy never denounced his Senate colleague, who was also a dear friend of his father's. But then Kennedy was always more of a nationalist than a liberal. While a student at Harvard, he sent the isolationist America First Committee a $100 contribution with a note attached telling them, "What you are doing is vital." World War II changed JFK's perspective, as it did for most isolationists. It also amplified Kennedy's fascination with greatness. He was awed by Churchill and would lip-sync Churchill's oratory on the I Can Hear It Now albums narrated by Edward R. Murrow. In later years, staffers knew they could win Kennedy's ear if they could make him think that greatness was in the offing. His entire political career was grounded in the hope and aspiration that he would follow FDR as a lion of the 20th century. JFK famously inherited this ambition from his father, Joseph P. Kennedy, the pro-Nazi Democratic Party boss who was desperate to put a son in the White House. In 1946, Joe distributed 100,000 copies of John Hersey's article on JFK's PT-109 exploits. Soon, an entire team of intellectuals was put to work, transforming JFK into the next great man of action. Kennedy's first book, Why England Slept, an expanded version of his undergraduate thesis, was a dish concocted by many chefs. His second, Profiles in Courage, about great men who stick to their principles despite adversity, was essentially produced by a committee chaired by Ted Sorensen and only intermittently supervised by Kennedy himself. Of course, Kennedy accepted the Pulitzer alone. Kennedy was the first modern politician to recognize and exploit the new clout enjoyed by intellectuals in American society. The old brain trusters were economists and engineers, men concerned with shaping earth and iron.